I chose four short ones, so that they only could fit on a page. There's no spiritual significance between the choice. I just thought, oh, I have four that will go on a page and I can print them out on two sheets of paper. They were my criteria. This book contains 301 of the koans that Dogen collected, and he put them all together in a book. Didn't add any commentary. They're all in Chinese. They're written in Chinese. He didn't translate them into Japanese. However, he quotes them often in the chapters of the Shobo Genzo and comments on them endlessly. Not all of them, but some of them. And in the back of this book, there's a list of which koans appear in which chapters of the Shobo Genzo. But you'll find that the translation here and the translation in the Shobo Genzo chapters sometimes is different. Meaning shouldn't be different, but the words may be different. You've been studying Genjo Koan in the London group. Same word, koan. Koan originally meant a public notice. So I'm not much of a scholar, but presumably it meant a piece of paper that people pinned up on the public notice board. How that got to mean a story about a conversation between the masters and students, I don't know. Somebody might know, do you?
Didn't it originate in legal, so it's kind of like a verdict?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, that's what
sometimes
I
mean. Sometimes it's a case.
But
about
can learn from.
Okay.
Read it and learn from it.
Well, that's the word, where case comes from.
Yeah, it's a case that's kind of...
Okay.
Public case.
Put on record,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Okay, oh, that's nice. I didn't know that. I know very little other than the narrow window through which I looked at everything. That's nice. So they I wonder if they were pinned up on boards for people to read in temples. Oh, there's a new one. Come and look at this one. Master Zanzo said, and the student said, I wonder. But certainly they were used for teaching. And as I said in one of the talks yesterday, it appears that our propensity to generalize, to extract the principle from whatever we read or study, may not have been as strong in medieval China and Japan. So that rather than some monks reading all these stories and saying, okay, I know I can see what's being taught here, and then writing it down in general terms, they just whack the stories themselves up. That's the story, read it, and learn what you learn from reading it. As I say, Dogen collected them without commentary. Although he comments on them in the Shobo Genzo, he doesn't in that book. But there are commentaries in there. But they come from my teacher and me. They're curious. Some of them, as hard as we tried, don't really make a lot of sense. And some of them are crystal clear. Um, for a coin not to make much sense to me doesn't mean that it's some device to get me past my intellectual mind or to break through the barrier of logic or something. It usually just means I probably have to go back and see what the translation was like. It may be mistranslated somewhere, or much more likely, it's difficult to understand the metaphors and the situation of the story itself, because they're all recorded a long time ago. But hopefully these four are fairly clear, because they're simple. Some of them are humorous, and some of them are much more serious.
You say, as you see it, they're not about breaking through rational thought, but there's a whole body of thinking that that's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
That there isn't a logical answer. You are supposed to just keep repeating them and absorbing them into yourself and becoming one with them without trying to analyse them.
Yeah, I think that's a load of shit, actually.
Okay.
Oh. Sorry. No, I do.
It's on record, mate.
The Reverend Dido Laurie, God rest his soul, at Zen Mountain Monastery, just after we published ours, he published his similar translation of the same koans, but with a particular kind of way of analysing them, which I can't get my head around, but it ends up with a paragraph where he makes absolutely no sense. He says things like, you know, the moon flew over the clouds and all is clear, the window was open and I was asleep. Things like that, you know, so that's what it sounds like to me. So I think it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I have no idea why they want to do that, why people should think that what is obviously, if you read it, somebody without a connection to Buddhism reads it and says, oh, they're stories, aren't they? Somebody's talking to somebody else. Well, why would somebody talking to somebody else want to be like that? I don't get it. I really don't. But it's probably almost the normal way of looking at koan stories.
Isn't there a way in which you can not understand it and then it just percolates under the surface for some weeks or months and then one day you do understand it? Is that a legitimate way of working or thinking about it?
Well, yes, a legitimate way of working on anything. Nothing to do with Buddhism. You read the newspaper.
Are
they not questions?
Are they more record of conversation? Are they not like...
They're all a record of actual conversations.
Yeah.
Although they may have been altered.
Are they not presented as a question or some kind of riddle, or is that like talking from?
Well, they follow a pattern. The pattern is, usually, not always, a student asks a teacher, what's it all about then? And the teacher gives an answer which the student doesn't understand or is not enough. So the student answers another question, more penetrating. And then the master or the teacher gives another answer. That's the general pattern, which is what you'd expect, isn't it? Between a conversation between a student and a teacher. So I don't get that other take on it at all. If somebody does and would like to explain it, that's fine. I don't. Yes, of course, you can read some of them. And
it's just that at the time you read it, you may not understand what it's about, but then later on, one day, maybe what it's about just suddenly comes to you.
Well, that for me is life. Everything's like
that. So it doesn't. Yeah. So that's a sort of legitimate way of looking at things.
Well, I don't understand if I exaggerate what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
you you read a koan and you retain it and you meditate on it.
I don't mean actually keeping it.
And then sometime
just...
later, boom, you get it.
Yeah.
I don't see that as anything particularly unusual.
I'm not saying you necessarily have to keep it with you, because
right. I mean, some people do. I think
just like
you get koans to meditate on, don't you?
In some tradition, you're told to walk around with it in your head, in your heart, all day, every day, every waking second.
That's another way of doing it.
Sounds like a recipe for frustration to me. And if you get yourself frustrated, of course, when you understand, oh, I'm frustrated, you feel wonderful. Satori. That's a good way to get Satori. Bang your head against the wall, and then when you stop... I just don't get it. And I don't have any experience of it. And Nishijima Roshi, my teacher, liked to analyse a bit more than I feel comfortable with. He says that they're in four phases. The first questioner, student, asks a question which is intellectual. So what's the secret of enlightenment? Which is an intellectual question. And then the master gives a practical answer to sometimes to jolt the student out of his intellectual state. And then based on that practical answer, the student comes back with a more realistic question, and then the answer comes back often with a poetic answer, something that captures the nature of reality. And my teacher used to like those four structures: idealistic approach, materialistic approach, realistic approach, and then reality itself. And he wrote a lot about the way that Dogen writes in those four phases. And he saw it's a useful way to look at the koan stories.
Do they always come in this particular order?
Not always, but very, very largely, yes. But I say, I've only got a narrow window. I've only approached this through one teacher, and this book is the result. So how other people interpret them, I haven't compared it with other people's interpretations or anything, which is quite narrow-minded. But you can do one thing and maybe finish it. If you try and do more than one thing, it's more difficult to finish it. Elena. So, book one, number 10. It's one of the simpler ones, but you can see the structure. Tell me how that will break through your intellect. One day, a monk asked Master Seigen Gyoshi, "What was Master Bodhidharma's intention in coming to China from India?" Seigen Gyoshi: "He just acted as he was." The monk said, "Would you tell me again what you just said right now in words that I can understand?" Seigen Gyoshi said, "Come here." The monk approached his master. Seigen Gyoshi said, "Remember this clearly. Can you understand that?"
Yeah, I think so.
Makes sense, yeah.
Makes sense? It's a teaching about reality. About not getting tied up in ideas, isn't it? So the student asked a question which seemed to have been a kind of standard question in Chinese Buddhism. It comes a lot. I don't know why. It's a question about why do we do things, I suppose, in essence, or what is behind this Buddhist transmission, or something like that, something complicated. But Setigan Goshi said, well, he just did it. He just followed himself. To me, that suggests that Seigen Goshi is saying that Master Bodhidharma just followed where his life was leading, which is what I was trying to say yesterday. But the monk can't understand that, because he's expecting some kind of complicated intellectual answer, maybe. So Seigen Goshi wants to shake the student out of his thinking state. So he says, come here, remember that clearly. So somebody asks you to come and you come. So you just follow your life, your own actions. So that's the simple story there. Now, I can't for the life of me see how that fits with all the other stuff people tie around coins at all. And you can read the commentary, which says in more detail what I was trying to say. Yeah, you know, people ask me why I went to Japan in 1977. Or why did I come back to England in 1999? And I give them reasons. But actually, I don't know the real reason myself. I give people reasons. Well, you know, Japan was in a difficult stage, and economic depression, and I fancy going back, blah, 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 blah. But in the end, I don't know. I just ended up doing it. And if we examine sometimes our decisions, if we really reflect on them, it's difficult to find a reason. Because actually, a reason, what is a reason?
How far back you have to go to find the real reason.
Yeah, but does the reason exist? Is a reason a real thing? Can you hold a reason? Was a reason attached around my neck when I came back from Japan on a string? So, you know, a reason is a construct, isn't it? Is it?
Is it always?
Is it always?
Sometimes it's not.
When is it not?
I don't know if it's a real thing. You're making out it's you just thought it up.
No,
it could be a genuine reason.
A genuine reason, which is that on the string, or is that
someone grabs you by the hand and takes you on the plane to Japan? Is that a reason?
It's an action. Is it also a reason?
Somebody
Why
else's
be?
Reason. You can make logical, analytical choices to do something.
Absolutely.
But is that ultimately the reason why you would do something like change, moving countries? Because very often it's you're doing it ultimately. You may explain it rationally to yourself, but it's actually an emotional decision.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or it may not even be emotional.
It may just be random.
No, but some people might say there's following God's will, or following themselves, or they just had a feeling they wanted to go back.
Mm.
It may not always be emotional.
Seems like the right thing to do at the time.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah. The right thing at
yes.
the right time. Is there such a thing?
Is there such a thing?
I always thought there was.
I do too.
Yeah.
Any others?
Was
Is there a right thing at the right time in the right place?
Someone saying it's God's will.
Maybe.
In there. Belief system, they're making a rational decision. they're externalising the decision making, but they're making a rational choice that their external deity is dictating that they should do something.
Well, that may be true, but I don't agree.
No,
it's
bullshit.
If they hear God's voice very clearly in
their
head, then...
Intuition?
They need meditation.
Intuition.
Yeah.
So there's something in Buddhism that's been labelled prajna, which is often translated as wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, prajna means before thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Pra is before, same as Latin pre, and jna is thinking. Thought. So pre-thought, before thought. So wisdom in Buddhism is before thinking. Have anybody watched the series on the brain by David Eagleman? Well, he illustrates this very nicely when he shows that neuroscience can demonstrate that we often decide to do things before we make a rational choice, although we feel that we made a choice, the choice was made before it was conscious.
And Matt and I have had this conversation. Antonio Damasio, who's a neuroscientist,
he's been
saying very similar
same thing,
things.
Yeah, for longer.
The brain comes to a conclusion and a decision before the consciousness is actually aware of that decision being made. Similar sort of thing.
But don't we all equally do right things at the wrong times and wrong things at the right times?
Do we?
I guess.
Can you do a right thing at the wrong time?
I think that's true. Wrong timing, even if it's the right thing.
Alignment?
You do it in the wrong way.
Maybe just alignment,
time,
natural alignment. It depends.
How do you know when it's...
Or if you're not wanting something out of it. I don't know.
How do you know when you've done the wrong thing at the right time?
Just a question, really. Or just something. Just a thing. Because it's acceptance, isn't it? Yeah. So we do something wrong. We're maybe regretful afterwards that it's resulted in something, but at the same time, equally, we're learning from that. And it takes us to a different point in life. So it's happened for all the right reasons. At that time, that wrong thing took place, and it's changed maybe the course of whatever.
Can you tell the difference between doing the right thing at the right time, the wrong thing at the right time?
Not at the time, because I'm just winging it.
Does anybody have an experience of doing something at a particular time, and it just somehow feels...
But you want to say something which is probably a correct thing, but you feel now is not the time. Or if you say it now, it will backfire in some way or be taken in the wrong way.
I think at the time you could overthink it, couldn't you? And then sometimes it's just best not to overthink it at all, I guess. So at that time. So I won't stop, you know, maybe if it's a right thing or a wrong thing at that time in the action of, you don't question it, do you? Because then your intellectual minds or non-intellectual mind, whatever's kicking in and going, oh, no, a minute, wait. You just do it because it's right for you as the individual, you know?
Should the time and the thing be the same?
You've got to answer these questions for yourself.
For me,
there is action which feels right.
Yeah.
At the time that I do it.
So, in the sense, the time
and it may
the
be right.
Are not separate. That's what I'm trying to say. Is that where you're? The action and the time are the identical, or?
Well, they always are.
No, but we're separating, aren't we? We're saying there might be a right thing at the wrong time, but maybe
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm trying to say is,
me,
I have an experience of doing something at a particular time and it feeling, what can I use? Not necessarily right, but complete,
yeah.
Fitting. And I also have the sense of doing that when it doesn't feel complete or fitting, but later I realise it was. So if we start thinking about right things at the wrong time, wrong things at the right time, it's a real nightmare. So what I would advise is do what Bodhidharma seems to have done and just follow what happens. So if somebody says, come here, just come here. Or don't come here, as you do in the actual circumstances.
But somebody says, so basically you're answering the call, not your internal sort of impulse. But outside call. In this example, the master is calling, right? And the student answers external call rather than his own inclination.
Boy, we don't have to make things complicated, don't we? not just you. I mean, it just builds up slowly.
Yeah.
Doing the right thing at the wrong time, the only thing I can think of is the two Bonnie sketch where he's answering, they're doing Mastermind, and he's answering the question before, and therefore it becomes very comical. So he gets asked the question, and he answers the question before the question was asked.
Yes, yes,
and then
very funny.
It goes through. So doing the right thing, but at the wrong time, because the question's being answered before it's asked. This doesn't make any sense, does it? It's a very funny sketch.
Exactly,
that
goes
wrong. Well, there's another approach. We've illustrated what I wanted to illustrate very well. There's a little story, very simple little story, and we've embroidered it very nicely to extract the generalised principle. We really must, know whether, well, can you do the wrong thing at the right time? Or blah, 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 blah. And it's very deep in us, isn't it? Very deep.
There's another story, isn't there, of the master who almost had a pot of mints by him.
Mint?
Mints.
Mints?
Mints. Mints, as in sweets.
Oh.
And every time he would sit zazen, he would have a mint in his mouth. And students came and saw him doing that, and therefore they would also eat mints. But no one actually asked him why he would eat a mint as he sat zazen. And many years went by, and a whole body of students built up who would have mints whenever they sat in zazen. And then one day, one of them actually had the presence of mind to say, why? And he went, because I like mints. But a whole body of students was eating mints because the master did. So, yeah.
Next comment, number 41. It's another question, same one. What was a monk asked Master Sekito Kisen on Mount Nangaku? What was Master Bodhidharma's intention in coming from the west to China? Master Sekito Kisen said, ask the pillars outside. The temple has got a veranda, big wooden pillars supporting the roof. Ask the pillars outside. The monk said, I can't understand your answer at all. And Master Sekito Kisen said, I am also unable to understand the situation if I think about it. Can you get that one?
Mm-hmm.
Think about it, see if you can understand the situation.
What do the pillars look like again? What do the pillars look like again?
Well, the ones I've seen are round and made of wood,
okay.
And they go from the roof down to the ground. Not much to discuss on this. What about number 77? The great master Shoku on Mount Daiji in the Kō district preached to an assembly, "It is better to practice 1 foot than to explain 10 feet. It is better for us to practice 1 inch than to explain 10 inches. Of course, it wouldn't have been feet and inches in the original. Master Tozan says, "We can explain what we cannot practice, and we practice what we cannot explain." Do you think that's true?
Mm-hmm. Is this a conversation?
What do you think?
Well, it doesn't have the sort of setup as if they were talking to each other.
Well, one reason for that is because when they recorded the stories, they gave the speakers the titles that they had after the story often. So, for instance, when Master Tozan replied to Master Shoku, he may not have been a master.
I see.
So it's a bit quite confusing. Not always, but sometimes they, especially if they're famous masters, in the story they're given their title. So it sounds like two masters are talking, and if you check, you find that one was the other's student. So yes, it's a conversation, yeah. He's referring
to pretty relevant to what you were saying yesterday about studying as well.
I forgot what I said.
Yeah, you were talking about studying yesterday and books,
yes.
and knowledge and everything,
yes.
else. Is that that's kind of in relation, well, not purposefully in relation to that, but the gist.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it points out the difference between explanation or discussion and doing or action. Or practice, which is huge, just we don't notice. We paper over the crack. In fact, we convince ourselves that the way we explain things is the way things are. There's nothing more better example than that than the way we talk about Zazen. The way we talk about Zazen is nothing like how Zazen actually is. Oh, isn't it? Surely it is.
So what about the other way around? What's something we can't practice but we can explain?
Right action.
Practice what we cannot explain.
Yeah. Can explain.
The first part is explain what we cannot practice.
Right.
I can't quite think of.
Other way around.
Of what that would be.
Oh, what's that chocolate like you're eating? Oh, it's
chocolate.
Oh, like have a bit, taste it.
So that would be, we can't explain the chocolate, so we practice eating it. Right?
Well, if you want to use the same vocabulary, yeah. But rather than, it's easier to taste the chocolate than to try and explain the taste to somebody else. So practice means acting.
Hmm. So what does it mean when Master Tozan says we explain what we cannot practice? this.
Do you, you never explain things that you can't do?
No, I heard an explanation. What the right action is, like given by Dogen. If you're completely balanced, then everything you do from this balanced state is right. And I'm unable to practice it. I could understand the explanation, but it's something that I'm unable to practice.
You think?
Yeah, like, I'm never perfectly balanced. Especially if I want to do something. Yeah.
Let me think of another way to say the same thing. Talking about something and doing it are different. That's what he's saying. Is it difficult to understand?
I. The mathematical I. Square root of minus one. We can talk about it, we can explain it, but it doesn't actually exist. So we can intellectualise it. Sorry for those who understand maths.
It has clear geometric interpretation.
Huh?
It has clear geometric interpretation.
Yeah.
No, it's like it's intuitively clear.
Sorry.
Practice means doing. So we talk about or we explain things that we can't do.
Right.
And we do things that we can't explain. But you can play with the joining words. I mean, it's difficult to translate medieval Chinese into a way that suits everybody. So somebody will say, oh yeah, I understand immediately. Somebody will say, we explain what we cannot practice. Why cannot? Well, maybe we do not practice. Or maybe explain should be think about. But we can ring the changes. We can translate whatever sentence that was probably 10 or 15 different ways, which would suit everybody. So it's not a difficult meaning, it's a simple meaning. We, in theory, in our minds, we can explain things that we can't do. And in practice, we can do things that we can't explain. That's all. And it's a comment on Master Shoku saying, to practice, to do something is better than to talk about it. That's what he's saying, isn't it? He uses the word better. Well, he doesn't actually use the word better, but doing is better than talking about it. Now we could discuss what he means by better, in what way is it better? And then we develop our embroidery. But the meaning is very simple. It's a conversation between two people. And conversations are, if you record them and then study them, you try to drill holes in something that was very, very simple and direct.
So likewise, if I was to explain maths to anybody, it might as well be a two Ronnie's comedy sketch.
But it's more about while you're explaining an action, you're not doing it. All the time you're talking about it, you're not doing it.
Yes.
And so
well, you're
you
doing
stop
explaining.
You've got to stop talking about it.
To do it.
To do it. And vice versa.
Is it difficult to understand?
It's not difficult to understand, but we have a conversation of two people. I don't know who which one of them is student, which one of them is teacher. It's not clear from the context of this short paragraph. It's just a conversation.
Okay.
And if you assume that they are peers, they're equal, yeah, two masters talking. One has an opinion and the other one has an opinion, and they exchange opinions. And both opinions sounds very very valid to me.
Yeah,
one says
yeah.
Practicing better than explaining, talking. The other says no, it's just two different things. So they don't even contradict. Yeah, they in a way they.
Yes. Yeah,
it is not an
it's
argument,
not
but it's two different opinions.
Yeah.
One values practice more than words, the other one say, no, they're just different things. So, okay, the commentary we have from Nishijima, presumably, yeah, saying that he's clearly taking side of the first talker, first master. Maybe because he knows that this first master is also a teacher and his opinion more valuable and more and prevailing. But if you talk at them, if you look at them as equal opinions,
I take it.
I would personally take the side of the second person. There are two different things.
To me, the second master saying, we tend to like to explain things and go 10 feet instead of 1 inch.
No, the second master said we do both when appropriate.
I think they're agreeing with each other, and I
yeah.
think the
yeah,
second one
exactly.
is agreeing, because the first one is saying exactly what Mike was saying earlier, which is you can act, and you can only act in the present. So you can only act 1 inch, you can only act 1 foot. You can generalise and talk about 10 inches, and you can generalise and talk about 10 feet, but actually when it comes down to it, you can only act 1 inch, you can only act 1 foot at a time in time. And the other guy's coming along and saying, yeah, exactly, we can explain about the 10 inches or the 10 feet, but we can't actually do it. And we can practice the 1 inch and the 1 foot, but actually an instant, you can't actually explain it, because it's an instant. You can only talk in terms of, yeah? So they're agreeing with each other.
It's interesting, isn't it? The long Chinese story. And this is what we do. I think this is the reason why Dogen recorded them all without any commentary. We can check back on the names and see who was the master and who's the student.
But would it make any difference?
It may do, mightn't it?
Uh-huh.
But it may not.
The first one is the great master, the second one is the great
just
master.
Just the ordinary master.
Yes. There are many, many things we need to know to understand this little conversation. But don't forget that unless you understand this for yourself, in your own life, then it's just a kind of hobby to discuss it, isn't it, really? So, does it mean something to you? Well, I'm not sure. Well, try and make it mean something to you, then. It's not so difficult. Give up trying to think whether Master So-and-so is bigger than Master So-and-so, or whether it should be can or cannot, or give up all that and just read it and think, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, it's true. Or whatever. Make it mean something to yourself. Otherwise, it's a nice scholarly activity, and that in itself has great value in keeping you out of the world of people who like to do things.
I saw a quote the other day which caught me, which was, when you die, you won't regret the things you've done, you'll regret the things you haven't done.
Right.
When you're dead, you can't regret anything.
When you die.
Just before. I'll remember that. Next one's a bit longer. But prepare yourself for a very difficult story. One day a monk asked Master Dogo Enchi, well, this is a nice question to ask somebody, isn't it? Why don't bodhisattvas of transcendent mystic abilities leave a trace by which they can be followed? The master says, someone who has realised the truth knows. Monk says, Master, do you know? Master says, no, I don't know. Monk, why don't you know? Go away, you don't understand my intention. Can you understand that one?
What does trace mean?
Trace.
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 transcendent mystical abilities.
Well, bodhisattvas of transcendent mystical abilities is just an embroidered name for
people.
Well, bodhisattvas.
Yeah,
what are bodhisattvas? They're not Buddhas yet, are they? So they're on their way to becoming Buddhas.
Mm-hmm.
They're bodhisattvas, so they work in.
They choose not
in
to
the world.
And
they may do, yes.
So that they can stay behind.
So they can stay behind and save all living beings.
Yeah. Right.
Yes, but they're on their way.
Mm-hmm.
And they're developing transcendent mystic abilities. And why don't they leave some trace so I can follow them? That's what the student wants. He wants to know. Why can't
bodhisattva was just a symbol of the compassionate aspect of the Buddha, that it wasn't actually a real thing in itself. Would that be a wrong way?
If that's true, then they couldn't leave any traces.
I'm not sure why.
Well, the word bodhisattva was used to refer to people, wasn't it, originally?
Yeah.
It may have become symbolic.
Yeah.
But it was used to refer to people. Shravaka, this was some of the divisions that were introduced into Mahayana Buddhism. Shravaka, Pratyeka Buddha, Bodhisattva, Buddha. Is that right? So Shravaka is somebody who tries to become enlightened intellectually, follows the Buddhist path intellectually. Pratyeka Buddha is somebody who enters Buddhism through the physical world. So intellectual and physical. Bodhisattva is somebody who acts in daily life to find the truth of Buddhism, and the Buddha is the realized being. So they were used as categories to presumably categorize.
Does the Buddha contain all those other things?
Well, Dogen says so, yes. But this student obviously didn't know. He didn't know very much, did he, really? Because the master told him to go away. So maybe he was just a young student trying to get to grips with all this Buddhist sutras and teachings and names like Bodhisattva of the transcendent mystic abilities, or even just transcendent mystical abilities, enough to make you frightened if you're a 20-year-old young student.
I think it's very sexy. You know, there's the teaching of the Bodhisattva Bhumi, it's the 10 stages
right
on the path to being a fully fledged Bodhisattva. And by the time you get to stage 8, you've got clairvoyance, you've got the ability to bilocate, you've got what's that thing where you can make things move without touching them, what's that called?
Telekinesis.
You've got all those. And so if you've been reading about the Bodhisattva Bhumi, I can get those. Whoa, how can I find out how to get those? Oh, wow. There's a lot of people
absolutely
in the contemporary world who are interested in spiritual powers.
Yes.
Aren't there? And you
yes
get really hooked. Wow. I wish you could teach me how to do that, Mike.
I can, Jane. But it will cost you. Yes, absolutely, yeah. Nicely said.
But isn't it then coming back to the fact that what Maska or whatever his name is,
Enchi, Dogo Enchi,
yeah, he's turning around and saying, well, the reason they're not leaving any trace is because they're just ordinary. There's nothing special about them. So don't believe all this bullshit stories that Janet is.
You may interpret it like that, but that's nothing like what he says, is it? What he says is, someone who has realised the truth knows why they don't leave any trace.
All of these stories are bullshit.
Yeah, so what's realised the truth mean? There's a big question, isn't it? Anybody can answer that? What does realise the truth mean?
In the comment, it says that someone who has experienced the truth sees the trace of bodhisattva. That was the point of Master's reply.
Is it someone who's not bothered about that sort of thing anymore? Not worried anymore about finding a bodhisattva?
Who, what? Sorry.
Someone who's realised the truth isn't bothered about looking for traces of a transcendent mystical being.
Sounds like it, doesn't it? He's certainly not bothered about it. Because he says, I don't know. Why does he say, I don't know? He says, somebody who realises the truth... Somebody who realises the truth knows. And then when asked, he says, no, I don't know. Does that mean he doesn't realise the truth? Yeah, or it could be something to do with the word no. What does realise the truth mean? Anybody know what realise the truth means? Can you put it into your own words? In your reading this, aren't you? Words realise the truth. Somebody's realised the truth. What does that mean? Can you guess? Or do you know?
Well, to me, it's someone who's no longer thinking about trying to become, you know, what it is to be enlightened and just getting on with normality.
Yes, a normal person.
Yeah.
A human being.
Yeah.
Somebody who's not lost in their thoughts, trances, memories, but is present. So we've all realised the truth three times today. Yes, we have. The clouds may have come and gone, but at some stage during our zazen, either the first zazen or the second or third, those clouds would have parted for an instant and you will have realised the truth. Wow! Is that all the truth is? I'm just sitting here. Oh, birds are singing.
So really just being awakened to the reality of...
Not of anything.
Yeah.
Yes. Or to come back to what I was saying, to be
a
Buddha.
Yeah,
to
yes,
be awake.
Being awake, yeah.
Yes. Unfortunately, you don't have to be a Buddhist to be awake. So
like,
you don't need to be a Buddhist to be a Buddha.
All the people, wherever they are in the world, that are fully awake, but I've never had any experience or knowledge of what Buddhism is. They're just doing their thing.
Yes. Or us, we may be awake now and not awake the next moment.
Mm-hmm.
And awake the next moment, not awake the next moment.
That's really the truth of it.
So when you're awake, if you're in the state of being awake, do you know why the bodhisattva don't leave a trace? Well, in one sense you don't know, because it's not a state of intellectual activity. To be awake in the sense that is meant in Buddhist teachings is to be whole, as be, not to be only thinking. Of course your brain doesn't stop, but you're not thinking about something which is not, you're not thinking about something which is not present. So how can you know anything about traces of bodhisattvas?
Is the monk wanting explanations and reasons?
Yes, of course he does.
But going back to what we were talking about earlier, and that's not real. He's going to get the answer.
No.
From there.
So the master tells him to go away. The master tells him to go away because he realises that maybe this young monk is has been captivated by all the images created by the literature and talks he's hearing and literature he's reading. So let him go and settle down.
Can I ask a question? What about things like samadhi, like kensho?
Samadhi?
Some things that you hear about, is that important?
It's very vitally important.
Looking for those things? Or?
yes. I'm hoping to get them myself.
Are you?
Anytime soon. Samadhi, sam means together. And the verb ad means to collect together, or to maybe add. So, samadhi means to put together, originally.
Yeah.
So samadhi is, to me, when you put yourself together, or when you stop separating yourself. In other words, when you become whole. So yeah, we should all get samadhi.
Is it a state of spontaneous, not thinking?
It could
be. Mind and your body being completely one.
We can explain what we cannot practice. It's a state you've experienced many, many times, but you didn't notice, and you didn't connect it with the word. Instead, you've taken the word and you've given it some kind of special mystical meaning, which you're now searching for. No? Okay, good. Samadhi means a state of put together.
But what about if you do know it? You're talking about it just happens here every now and again, but is there not a state where you feel different from
that? Yeah, but it's not a state of knowing. As Dogen writes in Genjo Koan, it's not important to know that you're a Buddha. It's important to be a Buddha. To be awake, but it's not important to know that you're awake. So it's not important to know. It's not a state of knowing. It's a state of being. And we can discuss whether knowing, state of knowing, state of being are the same, but. to know something suggests that we have to kind of take ourselves out of it and recognize ourselves in it. So it's not that state. It's the state of one moon, as the ancient.
To be outside and recognizing that you're in a state implies the duality.
That's right, yeah.
Whereas the state itself is non-dual.
Yeah, so it's not knowing.
Yeah. There's nothing to know.
There's nothing to know, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I still think you can be in that state and then realise you're in that state.
Yeah, afterwards
not
you can.
Time.
Afterwards, yeah.
Yeah.
When you're not anymore.
And take a picture.
Yeah. Send it to everybody.
And try and get it again.
Otherwise, how would we know?
Yeah, you've got to be able to prove it.
It's not on Facebook, it just exists.
I'm just wondering, why Master just didn't tell student there's no such thing as mystical abilities?
Because then they stop trying, don't they? That's sort of stop trying if there's nothing.
I don't know why he didn't say that.
I don't know if this comes from the translation to English, but there's also, if you read the second line, someone who has realised the truth knows. It could mean that, well, I'm sure there's someone out there who knows, but...
Could be.
Is that a thing to ask?
Or it could mean, when you understand what Buddhism's about, you'll know. Or something like that. See, the thing is, there's no absolute certain way of knowing what any of these means, any more than there's any absolute certainty of me knowing how you understand what I'm saying. I've no idea what you understand from my words or what I understand from your words. I assume you're understanding what I'm saying to you, and you're assuming that I understand what you're saying to me. But there's no way of verifying.
Maybe that's why it's called public case, but
It's like a public debate, and you can just...
Yes, maybe.
Debate.
I don't know. I'm not a scholar. Oh, good. So there's this whole book full of these. So, you know, it's best to read them on your own. Close the book. Read one, close the book, and then read one next week. Otherwise, you can have endless discussions.
Yeah.